The letter of invitation arrived on a Wednesday, tucked between a bill from the chandler and a notice from the solicitor that Eleanor Ashworth had long since stopped reading. She had been summoned to Ashworth Hall. Not her Ashworth Hall, the modest estate in Wiltshire, where she had grown up pressing wildflowers between the pages of her mother's books, but the other one. The one belonging to her father's second wife and the two daughters who had arrived with her like furniture, filling every room Eleanor had once known. The invitation was written in her stepmother's hand, which meant it was not an invitation at all. "The Duke of Harrowfield requires a cataloguer for his library," Cecilia Ashworth had written, in the same clipped script she used for household accounts. "As you have made yourself otherwise useless this season, I have taken the liberty of recommending you. You will go on Friday. You will be grateful." Eleanor read it twice. Then she set it on the writing desk in the room she had been assigned when the renovations displaced her from her own. A room that faced north, that received no morning light, that had once been used for storing trunks. She did not feel grateful. She felt, if she was honest, something very close to relief. Harrowfield Park lay 2 hours north, through countryside that turned from managed farmland to something wilder, as the carriage, her stepmother's, sent with pointed generosity, climbed toward the moors. Eleanor watched the hedgerows give way to open ground and thought about what she knew of the Duke of Harrowfield. Very little, as it turned out. He had inherited 4 years ago. He did not come to London. He did not attend the season. He had been seen at his own estate perhaps a dozen times by anyone willing to report on it, and the reports were contradictory. "Cold," some said. "Strange," said others. "Brilliant," said a very few, in the tone people use when they mean to say difficult. His mother had died the same year he inherited. There had been a brother once. There wasn't any more. The carriage turned through iron gates, and Eleanor stopped thinking about what she knew and started paying attention to what she saw. Harrowfield Park was enormous in the way that certain old houses are enormous. Not aggressively, not as a statement, but simply as a fact, the way a mountain is a fact. Stone the color of winter honey. Windows that caught the late afternoon light and held it. Gardens that had once been formal and were now something more interesting. Still tended, but allowed to breathe. Roses climbing where they chose rather than where they had been told. The housekeeper who met her at the door was a small, broad woman named Mrs. Holt, who had the kind of face that had decided long ago to be kind and had never revisited the decision. "Miss Ashworth," she said, and her eyes did a quick, assessing sweep that Eleanor recognized, the look of someone determining whether a new arrival would require managing. "His Grace asked that I show you to the library directly. He prefers to establish the terms of an arrangement before anything else." "That seems efficient," Eleanor said. Something in Mrs. Holt's expression shifted, not quite a smile, but the precursor to one. "Quite," she said, and led the way inside. The library occupied the entire east wing of the ground floor, which meant it was the size of a modest house, and it smelled of old paper and beeswax and something that might have been cedar. Shelves rose to a ceiling that was painted in faded blues and golds, and the light came in through tall windows that faced the garden. And there were stacks of books on every available surface in a disorder that was clearly not neglect but accumulation, the disorder of a mind that had been working and had not stopped to tidy itself. Eleanor walked in and immediately forgot to be anxious. She was running her fingers along the spine of a collection of botanical illustrations when she became aware that she was not alone. The Duke of Harrowfield was standing at the far end of the room. He was taller than she had expected and younger. She had constructed a vague mental image of someone gray and remote, and this man was neither. He was perhaps 30, with dark hair that needed cutting, and the kind of face that might have been handsome in a conventional sense if it had ever been arranged in a conventional expression, which it currently was not. He was watching her with gray eyes that gave nothing away and everything at once, the way deep water does. He had a book open in his hands. He had not been reading it. "Miss Ashworth," he said. His voice was even. "You're late." "Your carriage lost a shoe outside Amesbury," Eleanor said. "I apologize on behalf of the horse." The gray eyes did something she couldn't quite name. "Mrs. Holt will have told you the termine," he said. "The library requires cataloguing. The previous system was my father's, and it is," he paused, "idiosyncratic." "I noticed," Eleanor said. "You have 3 copies of Herodotus shelved under natural philosophy." A silence. "Yes," the Duke said, "I do. I'll move them."
"I'd rather you asked first."
"Of course," Eleanor said. "May I move the Herodotus?" Something crossed his face. Fast, involuntary, gone before she could be certain of it.
"Yes," he said, "you may."
He left without looking back, which Eleanor had expected. What she had not expected was that she would watch him go with the distinct impression that she had, somehow, already surprised him. She started with the Herodotus. The first week passed in the particular peace that Eleanor had learned to find in work. The quiet satisfaction of a system emerging from disorder, of spines aligned, and dates confirmed, and notes accumulated in the small leather journal she carried everywhere. Mrs. Holt brought tea at 11, and again at 4, and occasionally sat with her for 10 minutes, and said nothing in particular, which Eleanor found deeply restful. The Duke appeared in the library approximately twice a day, always at the same times, once in the morning, once in the late afternoon, and said very little, but his eyes tracked her progress with an attention he did not try to conceal. He would stand at his own desk, which occupied the center of the room like a ship in harbor, and work through correspondence, or read, and Eleanor worked around him, as one works around a piece of furniture that is also, somehow, watching you. On the 4th day, she found the portrait. It was hanging in the corridor adjacent to the library, part of a series of family portraits that ran the length of the east wing, generations of Harrowfields staring down with varying degrees of disapproval. This one was different. It was larger than the others, more recent, painted in the style of the last century's end rather than its beginning. A man in his middle years, severe and composed, flanked by 2 boys. The elder boy had the Duke's gray eyes. The younger was perhaps 8, and was looking at something outside the frame with an expression of concentrated interest that Eleanor recognized, suddenly, and with a small shock, as the same expression the Duke had worn when she'd moved the Herodotus. She would have passed it without stopping, except for the plaque. The plaque read, "George Harrowfield, 7th Duke, with sons James and William, 1799. Eleanor looked at the plaque, then she looked at the painting, then she looked at the plaque again. She went back to the library, found the Duke at his desk, and said, "Forgive me, the portrait in the corridor, the family group." He looked up. "Yes. The plaque says 1799. It does. The elder boy, your brother, I assume, is wearing a coat with a style of collar that wasn't fashionable until 1802 at the earliest. And the younger boy..." She stopped, because she was pointing at a painting of him as a child, and it occurred to her this might be impertinent. The Duke had gone very still. "The younger boy," she continued more carefully, "has a book in his hands. The binding style is consistent with a printer who was only operating from 1801 onwards.
I've been cataloging your library. I recognize the style. She paused. The portrait was painted later than the plaque says, 3 years later at minimum, which would make it 1802, or perhaps 1803. The silence in the room was not uncomfortable exactly. It was the silence of something being processed.
No one has ever noticed that, the Duke said.
His voice was different. She couldn't have explained how. The same even tone, the same measured delivery. But something underneath it had shifted. The way the light shifts when a cloud moves. Not dramatic, but entirely changed. It's a small thing, Eleanor said.
It isn't, he said.
He looked at her for a moment with those gray eyes that had been unreadable since the first day and were now something else. Intent, she thought,
focused in a way that made her want to stand very still. My father had the date changed after my brother died. James died in 1803. My father... He stopped, started again. He wanted the record to show they had all been together, earlier, before.
Eleanor did not say I'm sorry, because sorry was what people said when they didn't know what else to say, and she thought this man had heard it until the words had been worn smooth and meaningless.
He wanted to keep the time, she said instead.
The Duke looked at her. Before the loss, she said, he wanted to keep that time intact, so he moved it. Something happened in the gray eyes. It was not a crack, exactly. It was more like the moment before a crack, the instant when something under pressure becomes aware of itself.
Yes, the Duke said quietly. That is exactly what he wanted.
He returned to his correspondence. Eleanor returned to the library. But for the rest of the afternoon, she was aware of him in a way she had not been before. Not as a presence to work around, but as a person carrying something heavy who had, for one moment, set it down. The days accumulated. Eleanor learned the rhythms of Harrowfield Park the way you learn a piece of music. First the structure, then the feeling underneath the structure. She learned that the Duke took his breakfast alone and his dinner the same way, but that Mrs. Holt always set two places in the small dining room, and that the second place had begun to be used when Eleanor stopped eating in the kitchen at the housekeeper's insistence. She learned that he walked the East Gardens at dusk regardless of weather, and that if she happened to be in the library when he returned, he would sometimes stop in the doorway and say something about a book she'd moved, about a notation she'd made in the catalog, about nothing in particular. Before continuing on, she learned that he laughed very rarely, but that when he did, it was involuntary, and he looked briefly startled by himself, as though laughter were a country he had not visited in some time and had forgotten he had a passport for. She learned that he had read everything in the library at least once, and some things many times, and that the books with the most wear were not the grand volumes on history and philosophy, but smaller things. A collection of correspondence between two naturalists, a novel she didn't recognize, a slim volume of poetry with a name written on the flyleaf in a child's hand. James, the name said. She did not mention it, but she catalogued it with particular care and placed it where it would be easy to find. He noticed. She knew he noticed because the next morning the volume was not where she had placed it, and the morning after that it was back, and he said nothing, and she said nothing. And somehow, this was the most intimate thing that had happened between them. 3 weeks in, she found him in the library at 2 a.m. She had come down for a book. She had been unable to sleep, which was not unusual, and she had been in the middle of a translation she wanted to finish, and she had not thought to bring a candle because she had assumed the library would be dark. It was not. The fire was burning low, and the Duke was sitting in the chair nearest to it, in his shirt sleeves, without his coat, reading. He looked up when she came in
and for a moment neither of them spoke. "I couldn't sleep," Eleanor said, because it seemed necessary to explain herself.
"Nor could I," the Duke said. He did not tell her to go. He gestured very slightly toward the chair on the other side of the fire. She sat. They read in silence for perhaps 20 minutes, and the fire burned lower, and the house settled around them in the particular way old houses settle at night, and Eleanor became aware that this was the most comfortable she had been in a very long time. Not happy exactly, though perhaps that too, but settled, as though she had been slightly misaligned for years and something had quietly corrected itself. "You said you were from Wiltshire," the Duke said without looking up from his book.
"Yes." "Your family's estate."
"My father's estate," Eleanor said. "My stepmother manages it now. She is very efficient." A pause. "You don't go back," he said. It was not quite a question.
"I go when I'm required to," Eleanor said. "I try not to require it."
He looked up then. The firelight did something to his gray eyes, warmed them, or perhaps simply illuminated what had always been there.
"How long?" he asked. She considered pretending not to understand.
7 years, she said instead. "Since my father remarried. 7 years of being..." She stopped, because the word she had been about to use was erased, and it seemed too raw for 2 in the morning with a man she had known for 3 weeks. "Of being what?" he said.
"Managed," she said finally, reduced to something that required less space.
The Duke closed his book. "I know something about that," he said, and his voice was very quiet, and she believed him entirely.
"The house," she said.
"The house," he agreed. "After my brother, after my mother. It became easier to..." He paused. "To reduce the space I occupied. To close rooms. To stop requiring things."
"You stopped going to London?"
"I stopped going anywhere."
Eleanor looked at the dying fire.
"And yet you hired a cataloger." Something moved in his expression. "The library needed cataloging," he said.
"The library has needed cataloging for 4 years, Eleanor said. "Mrs. Holt told me." The silence that followed was different from the silences that had come before. Not the silence of 2 people working in parallel, but the silence of 2 people looking at the same thing.
"Yes," the Duke said finally. "I suppose it has." His hand was resting on the arm of the chair. Eleanor did not know who moved first. Perhaps neither of them moved. Perhaps the distance simply closed of its own accord. But when she looked down, her hand was beside his, and his fingers had turned and found hers, and they sat like that while the fire went to embers, not speaking, not needing to. The letter from her stepmother arrived on a Tuesday. Eleanor read it at the breakfast table, while Mrs. Holt pretended to be occupied with the tea service, and the Duke watched her over the rim of his cup with the careful attention of a man who has learned to read rooms. "My stepmother," Eleanor said, setting the letter down with a precision that communicated everything, "has written to inform me that Lord Fenwick has expressed an interest in making me an offer. She considers this a remarkable opportunity given my..." She looked at the letter. "Given my limited prospects and advancing years." She was 24. "Lord Fenwick," the Duke said, in a tone she had not heard from him before. "You know him."
"I know of him."
The gray eyes had gone very flat. "He is charming and well connected and has been through 3 companions in his many years, all of whom have left his household without explanation." Eleanor looked at the letter again. "She will want an answer." "What answer will you give her?"
"I don't know yet," Eleanor said. "I haven't decided what I'm worth."
The Duke set down his cup. He said very quietly, "I have." She looked at him. He said nothing else. but the gray eyes held hers across the breakfast table with an intensity that made the room feel smaller, and Eleanor thought, "Something is changing, and I don't know how to stop it, and I'm not certain I want to." The Harrowfield Midsummer Gathering was the first social event the Duke had hosted in 4 years, and it had been Mrs. Holt's doing. Eleanor was fairly certain of this, though Mrs. Holt denied it with the serenity of someone who has never been caught at anything. 40 guests, a week of dinners and rides, and an evening ball on the final night. The house came alive in a way Eleanor had not seen. Fires in rooms that had been cold, voices in corridors that had been silent, the smell of flowers cut fresh from the garden. The Duke bore it with the expression of a man walking into cold water who has decided that the discomfort is worthwhile, and Eleanor found this so unexpectedly endearing that she had to turn away to compose herself on at least 2 occasions. Among the guests was a Mr. Cavendish, tall, easy-mannered, with the kind of smile that arrived before it was needed and stayed after it had served its purpose. He attached himself to Eleanor with a smoothness that was impressive in its efficiency, and said all the right things about the library and the gardens and her work, and she found herself thinking, "This is what charm looks like when it is not accompanied by anything underneath it." He found her on the second afternoon, in the rose garden. "The Duke is an unusual man," Cavendish said pleasantly, deadheading a rose that was not his to deadhead. "Most people are unusual if you pay attention," Eleanor said. "He watches you," Cavendish said. "Have you noticed? Across rooms, in conversation, as though..." He smiled. "Well, one wonders what he sees." "One might simply ask him," Eleanor said. "I did, actually." The smile did not change. "He said he sees someone worth watching, which is either very romantic or very concerning, depending on one's interpretation." He looked at her sideways. "You're not the first woman he's brought to this house, you know. The last one left after 6 months. He has a habit of collecting people. For a time." Eleanor said nothing. "I only mention it," Cavendish said, "because you seem like someone who deserves to know what she's walking into." She found the Duke that evening in the library. Her library, she had begun to think of it, which was itself a kind of answer. And she stood in the doorway and looked at him, and he looked up and saw her face and put down his pen. "What did Cavendish say to you, Hawinte?" he said. "He said you collect people," Eleanor said, "for a time." The Duke was very still. "He said there was a woman before me who left after 6 months." She kept her voice even. "He implied you have a habit of finding people interesting and then not finding them interesting." "Eleanor." His voice was rough. It was the first time he had used her name. "I need to know," she said, "if I am a project, if this..." She gestured, a small frustrated movement that encompassed the library and the house, and the two of them, and everything that had been accumulating between them for weeks. "If this is something you do, because I cannot..." She stopped. "I have been managed and reduced and made to take up less space for 7 years, and I will not do it again for someone I..." She stopped again, harder this time. The Duke stood up. He came around the desk and crossed the room and stopped close enough that she could see the pulse at his throat, and he said, "The woman Cavendish mentioned was a cousin of my mother's who came to help settle the estate after she died. She left because the work was finished, and I gave her a settlement and wrote her a reference, and she is now happily established in Edinburgh." He paused. "Cavendish knows this. He was at the dinner I held for her before she left." Eleanor stared at him. "I don't collect people," he said. "I have spent 4 years in this house because I did not know how to be in the world without the people I had lost. and then you arrived and corrected the date on my family portrait and told me my father had been trying to keep the time and... His voice cracked, just slightly, just once. And I thought, here is someone who sees things. Here is someone who looks at what is actually there, rather than what is supposed to be there. And I did not know what to do with that except want more of it. Eleanor's heart was doing something complicated. You should have told me, she said. But her voice had lost its edge. I know, he said. I am not practiced at this, at saying things before they become urgent. He looked at her with the gray eyes that had gone from unreadable to intent to something she had no name for, something that made her feel like the portrait, like someone was finally getting the date right. You are not a project. You are not a collection. You are the only person in 4 years who has walked into this house and made it feel like something other than a monument. The silence between them was very small. Mr. Cavendish, Eleanor said carefully, is not a good person. No, the Duke agreed. He is not. I should have seen it sooner. You saw it, he said. You came and asked me directly. That is... He exhaled. That is exactly what you do. You look at what is there. She looked at him. He looked at her. The fire was doing what fires do in this house, in this room, at this hour, burning low and warm, and making the world outside the library feel very far away. I don't want to go back, she said. It came out quieter than she intended. To my stepmother's house, to being managed. Then don't, he said, and his voice was very steady, the way it is steady when a man is holding something with both hands to keep it from shaking. Stay. Not because I am asking you to work, not because the library needs you, though it does, because I... He stopped, tried again. Because I have been invisible in this house for 4 years, and you are the first person who has looked at me and seen a person rather than a title or a wound, and I find that I am not willing to go back to being invisible. Not now. Not after this. Eleanor thought about the portrait in the corridor, the plaque with the wrong date, the father who had moved time itself to preserve something he couldn't keep. She thought about the book of poetry with a child's name on the flyleaf, and the way the Duke had looked when she placed it where he could find it, and the way he had never mentioned it, but had found it, and returned it, and said nothing because some things don't need to be said. She thought about 7 years of being reduced to something that required less space. I see you, she said. I want you to know that. I have seen you since the second day, when you told me about the portrait and your voice changed and you thought I wouldn't notice. He was very close now. She hadn't tracked the distance closing, but it had, and she could see the exact moment the last of his composure let go. Not dramatically, not all at once, but in the way a held breath releases, quietly and completely. I know, he said. That is the most terrifying thing that has ever happened to me. She laughed, surprised, genuine, the kind of laugh that escapes before you can decide whether to allow it. And he looked briefly startled, and then he smiled, a real smile, the kind she had seen only twice before. The kind that made him look like the boy in the portrait who had been looking at something outside the frame with concentrated interest. He cupped her face in his hands. Stay, he said. Yes, she said. He kissed her with the careful desperation of a man who has been waiting a long time to do something and is determined to do it correctly. And she kissed him back with the particular relief of someone who has been carrying a weight they didn't know they were carrying, and has finally set it down. The engagement was announced the following morning, which scandalized several of the guests and delighted Mrs. Holt so profoundly that she cried into the tea service and then denied it. Eleanor's stepmother arrived 3 days later, unannounced, in a carriage that she had clearly driven hard, wearing an expression that had been assembled in a hurry and showed the seams. She arrived in the front hall and found the Duke of Harrowfield waiting for her. Not Eleanor, the Duke.
Your Grace, Cecilia Ashworth said, recalibrating with impressive speed. I came as soon as I heard. I must say this is all very sudden, and I wonder if Eleanor has been entirely.
Miss Ashworth, the Duke said, has accepted my proposal. The settlements are being drawn. The banns will be read on Sunday. He paused. I understand you recommended her for this position.
Cecilia blinked. Yes. I thought it might be useful for her to.
It was, he said. I am grateful.
The gray eyes were very steady. She is the most remarkable person I have encountered in my adult life, and I intend to spend the rest of it ensuring she knows that. I thought you would want to be aware.
Cecilia Ashworth opened her mouth and closed it again. Mrs. Holt will show you to a room, the Duke said. You are welcome to stay for the wedding. Eleanor, watching from the top of the stairs, pressed her fingers to her mouth. He looked up and found her immediately. Across the distance, through the chandelier light and the marble and the accumulated grandeur of the hall, and his expression said everything that 4 years of solitude and 7 years of erasure had been building toward. I see you. I chose you. Let them look. They were married in the chapel at Harrowfield Park on a morning in September when the light came in at an angle that turned everything gold. Eleanor wore deep blue. Mrs. Holt had opinions about color. And for once, Eleanor did not argue. And when she walked through the doors and saw him standing at the altar with an expression of such transparent, unguarded feeling that she thought her heart might not survive it, she understood that this was what it felt like to be gotten right. His vows were not the standard ones. I promise, he said, in the quiet of the chapel, to look at what is actually there, to see you as you are rather than as you are supposed to be, to correct the record when it is wrong. He paused, and to be corrected in turn. Eleanor's vows were shorter. I promise, she said, to keep looking. 2 years later, the library was finished. Not catalogued, it had been catalogued for 18 months, a system so elegant that Mrs. Holt had declared it a work of art, and the Duke had had it bound. Finished in the sense that it felt complete, inhabited, used, a room that knew it was loved. Eleanor was sitting in the chair by the fire, which was her chair now in the way that things become yours, not through possession but through use. And the Duke was at his desk, and between them on the hearthrug, their daughter was conducting a very serious investigation of a botanical illustration that had escaped from a lower shelf. She's going to eat that, the Duke said, without looking up.
She won't, Eleanor said. She's examining the binding. A pause.
She is, he said, with the quiet wonder of a man who is still surprised by things, who has chosen to remain surprisable. Eleanor looked at her daughter, who had her father's gray eyes and her mother's habit of looking at things longer than was strictly necessary, and felt something settle in her chest, the same settling she had felt on the first night in this library, at 2 in the morning, with a dying fire and a hand finding hers in the dark. Tell me again, he said from his desk. Tell you what?
What you noticed about the portrait.
It was a ritual by now, the story they told themselves about how they had begun, the way all couples have a story and return to it. The collar was wrong, Eleanor said, and the book in your hands was bound by a printer who wasn't working yet. 3 years off, at minimum. She paused. You looked like you'd been struck.
I had been, he said. He was watching her across the room with the gray eyes that had gone from unreadable to intent to this. This warm, steady, completely legible thing that she had learned to read as fluently as any book in the library. No one had ever looked at it long enough to notice.
"I look at things," Eleanor said.
"You look at things," he agreed. Their daughter had abandoned the botanical illustration and was now attempting to climb the lowest shelf, which was a development that required intervention. Eleanor rose, and the Duke rose, and they crossed the room at the same moment from different directions, and their daughter looked up at both of them with gray eyes full of concentrated interest and made a sound of profound satisfaction. Eleanor lifted her and felt the small, warm weight of her settle against her shoulder and looked across the top of her head at her husband, who was looking back at her with an expression she had no word for except home. Outside, the autumn light was doing what it did in September at Harrowfield Park, coming in at an angle that turned everything gold. The roses were going over in the garden. The library smelled of beeswax and cedar and old paper and faintly of the tea Mrs. Holt had brought it for and forgotten to collect. The portrait in the corridor still had the wrong date on its plaque. They had decided to leave it. Some corrections, they had agreed, were better made in living than in bronze. "Thank you for staying with Eleanor and the Duke until the very end. This story began with a wrong date and became something about what it means to truly look at a portrait, at a person, at the life someone has built around their grief, and to say, I see what is actually there." If you want more stories about quiet recognitions and the people brave enough to act on them, subscribe and ring the bell, because there are more of them waiting. Every view, every comment, every person who stays until the last line, you are the reason these stories exist. Thank you.